many judging philosophies you want to tell me? Because usually judges will say, yeah, I hate you, or, you know, they'll let you know if they've got any prejudices that they don't want to hear.
Yeah, I chose a tournament for Claremont in Vancouver, and a judge hated this one Claremont team, and she told me that, and they said, she said that, don't ever let me judge you again, because I'm going to down you. And I said, really, she said that? So I approached her in the tavern, and I said, you said this, and she said, yeah, I did. So I had a taste to pull her out of the round and give another judge for that. But that's really rare. Another thing about your point, you don't just ask him if you have any judging philosophies, although that's better than nothing. Specifically, what are you looking for? You've been preparing, what are you looking for? Or even before your preparation, what do you think you might run on that topic? Or, you know, just if you have a specific idea of an issue in mind, better than a generic question like that.
And don't do it just before the round starts. Do it before the 15-minute starts.
Yeah.
And the other thing to say is, I think it's really important, certainly in the region in which I was coaching last year, because Parley was fairly new there were a lot of judges who were CEDA judges or LD judges who had been dragged in to judge non-policy debate. If that's the case, you also have changes to make. You also have to know, you know, how you're going to present the case in terms of, you may really want to hammer home value criteria, you know, make sure you have 29 points, you know, and they all are, you know, solvency, inherency, harms, topicality, all that kind of stuff. Whereas if, you know, you walk into the room and I say hi, and you think, oh, this is Mark, he's really, you know, an English debater, so I can pretty much make it up as I go along, then your approach to the way you present your information, the structure that you use, is going to be very different. You know, and that ties in with your question, Raymond, about, you know, the audience analysis, in terms of that is also part of the debate preparation, but make sure you do it all before. Never leave it to be the last thing. You know, you're just about to stand up and give your first speech, and you ask me, do I have a judging philosophy? And I say, well, yeah, I'm a Tagata Rasa judge, or, you know, I'm a game paradigm judge. And you think, oh, can I have another 5 minutes whilst I just completely rewrite my case?
At some point, there might be, in some communities that are just getting really sick of that value criterion formulaic way of always saying them and not saying what it means or what purpose it's serving in your case. They might just, even right before the debate, you'll still ask them, and then you can take your words out or put them in accordingly, you know, just on the fly. Another thing is to watch out when you're discussing things. I think the entire time I coached Wyoming all last year, we would always use this line of argument. One of the issues about deciding about a judge was, oh, are they a policy judge, or were they a CETA hack or something like that? We never discussed what that meant hardly at all. And I'm not entirely sure we were always on the same page either. So just like your generic question, and if you just assume that because you think they're a flow judge or a quote-unquote flow judge or a policy judge, you got to be careful. That might just mean that you do the stock issues of the policy proposition, the ill, the blame, the cure, and the cost. It might mean that you really have to focus on the flow or something like that. But it might just mean that you have absolutely no chance because they're really angry. You know, they lost something that was important to them because of changing preferences in the marketplace for extracurricular activities at the university. It's not always true. There's a lot of people that are friendly to both, but even I try to be neutral, but I've had so many reasons to be angry because of the way I've been treated by policy people, and they have reasons to be angry by how weird Parley is too. You know, from any of your perspective, there might be somebody that you have reason to be angry about, and you might generalize that to the whole community or something like that. But, you know, it's still important to know if someone has the ability to flow the arguments, and they especially if they declare it or your coach told you they believe that, don't drop an argument. You know, don't drop number 27. You might make fun of their structure, you might cover them all and group them together very carefully and not do it one by one, but you still have to make sure not drop something silly.
The other thing I was going to say, you talked about after the debate.
Yeah.
I think it's really important. I've said, you know, I've got this big fat debate file with all my debates in. I try to encourage all my debaters to note the judge they had, note any particular, I don't want to say quirks, but anything that they said. Afterwards, when you talk to the judge is obviously automatically right because they've made the ballot already. Nothing you do will change that, but I'll talk about that later on. But, you know, if the judge says, well, the reason you lost was because you didn't deal with the following three issues, say thank you very much, go back, write down the reason you lost. Then the next week, when, you know, Raymond's judging you next time, you will know to include those issues and not to make the same mistake again. So I think it's all about, you know, if you are a novice, it's all about building up that repartee with judges to recognize the faces, to be known and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you can do it quite easily. Just keep the pieces of paper that you use. They were valuable enough for you during the course of the debate. They will continue to be valuable for you in the future. Everything you use in the debate you should keep, is my belief.
Yeah.
And get information back from judges.
And you wish you had it if you don't do it. I've been lazy before, I wish I did it, you know. And believe it or not, it's hard to become a national champion, right? Everything you do along the way and how diligent you are will determine how successful you are and what name you build for yourself. And I've assumed that's your goal. Maybe you just participate for lots of other reasons too. But, you know, a lot of people are pretty competitive once they get involved in debate. And if you don't have a file like that, you should. I wish I had, running lectures, I wish I had all the flows from judges' rounds I judged with Bill, because I knew he was responding on these two lectures that were about exactly what his cases were like. One of the points I wanted to make was he always talks about the benefits of the plan at the bottom, didn't argue why. This is another reason I think there's a lot of potential, because even championship teams will say, these are the advantages that derive from our plan, and it's just a natural sort of way the plan is worded, and says, of course it'll work, but there's no solvency argument there. You know, they don't actually argue how the plan will work and prove to you that it will work to get those benefits. They just assert the benefits at the end, and then everyone drops them at the end. Right? They're just down there at the bottom, they were supported, and they pull them up, and they blow them up later. So you gotta watch out for that. You had a question.
Yeah, I was gonna see if you had any suggestions. If like a resolution came out and it was a philosophical one, and what I ran into was a couple times last year where the prime minister who wanted to make the case could link it to a policy, and the other member of the government had no clue of what the prime minister was getting at or talking about. Like an example was, I don't remember the exact scenario, but like the way through a man's heart is through his stomach or whatever. And I linked that to a policy and I translated it to the definition was the way to get the Soviet Union in alliance with the US is to give them grain subsidies. But the other partner, you know, could not do anything. Is it best to do what the prime minister wants to do or meet somewhere in the middle?
If your partner had no idea anything about Russia and was confused by that link, you might have tried something else. Or ask, you know, explain it to him a little bit, but just to say, yeah. I mean, it seems like you're just saying we should help feed Russia, and that guy, anybody could understand that. If you had a hard time, it might have been the jargon you were using to explain it. You know what I mean? Just take it away from the jargon and say, this topic, though, the way that man's heart through his stomach is you have to interpret the meaning of it. That person should know that, too. Both of you should when you go into the round. But what is the meaning? It means feed someone, and then they'll like you. So if you want to make friends with somebody, you feed them. So if you want to keep your husband around and feed him. That's the sexist cliche that's coming in the topic. And that person should be able to leap from that to the fact that if you feed Russia, maybe they'll be our friend. And that was the substance of your case, right?
But it had to do a lot of the factual stuff with history, too.
Maybe the case was too complicated, you should have went something else. But I mean, it sounded like you could understand the thesis or she could understand the thesis of it. And maybe your problem was you were explaining some real tough terminology about political economy or something, you know? And so then you should just avoid that and get somewhere where you can both be on the same page. Because that person is a very important speech right before the block.
Yeah. I know this isn't very common in parley rounds, but that particular resolution sounds perfect, like for a patriarchy critique.
Mm-hmm.
Is that ever done in parliamentary debate? I've never seen it done. It always seems to.
I think if you want to be polite about it, because you're committed to feminism or something, you would say. So the equivalent of getting a text where you write sick and say, yeah, I think the resolution is sexist and there's a lot of problems with sexism in society, but the resolution still is talking about maybe we can interpret it as the way a person starts through their stomach or something like that. But I think I could almost see a reasonable link just to argue an anti-sexism case, but it's usually truistic, you know. There's not a lot of I guess there's still a lot of non-feminists out there, but not in academic communities.
Yeah, I just wanted to respond to the point that you've made as well, but the you see it quite often in teams where the way of growing the team is to pair somebody who's very good with somebody who's very weak. Now that's a really great thing for both people, but it requires certain amounts of understanding on the part of both the very good person and the person who's learning. I think it's your burden if you have experience and you have knowledge, it's your burden to take whoever you're debating with you. If you're not or you can't do that, then you need to seriously reappraise the way the two of you work. I've seen it time and time again on teams that I've judged where one member of the team is brilliant, the other member of the team is very less than brilliant. The blame always lies with the very less than brilliant person, whereas almost entirely the blame actually lies with the person who is brilliant, who could be doing a whole better job of explaining what was going on. I think you're on very dangerous ground if you try to debate a case where your member of government isn't with you. you really need to investigate quite seriously how you go about doing this. And the great thing about parliamentary debate, for me, is that, you know, my debate partner was a big kind of socialist kind of give all the money to the third world and feed everybody kind of person. And I was a dyed-in-the-wool, right-wing, you know, let them all starve kind of person. So he'd stand up and say, this is the way we should deal with the third world. And I had very little information about third world debt, you know, third world since decolonization. But what I could do was argue the philosophy behind what he was saying. And I think all too often people forget that you know, as a member of government, you can give distinct strands of information. You can make a distinct contribution to a debate without actually having 29,000 facts at your fingertips. Your prime minister can stand up and say the gross national debt of Rwanda is, you know, whatever it is, and the three richest people in the US have more than the, you know, the combined debt of the bottom 16 countries in the world. But then I can stand up and say, well, hang on a minute, you know, let's abstract away from this. Let's simply talk about the benefits or the moral obligation upon us, if the motion is a should, the moral obligation upon us to feed people when we are in gluttony. So I think, you know, there are two issues there. The first one is that you should never debate a case where you haven't, where your partner is not entirely 100% with you. Secondly, one way around that is to try and persuade one member of the team to really deal with the philosophical issues if you want to deal with the hard and fast factual issues. Brendan?
I would say, and I agree with that process. However, I think it would be more apropos if you were to do it during rehearsal time as opposed to an actual tournament. And then you get an opportunity to see how each other thinks, get to take the resolution or the proposition and debate it in a different format. Let's say that you want to try a policy structure to your case, or you want to try a value structure to your case, or you want to look at it from an historical overview to structure your case. If you look at the same proposition but you utilize different techniques and you do that within an hour time frame, you can prep four cases and get a feel for what your colleague is thinking.
Good point. A lot of times it'll still come up at some point where you're going to think of an idea and you hadn't prepped it or practiced it before, and you just got to make that, I have some tips on that on my sheet about outlining. Make that structure so simple. Remember I had 3 P's here of case construction. The promise, the perils, and the process, right? You need to remember. You make your case structure have only 3 parts, like, oh, that's why you keep that in basic composition classes. You only have 3 main body points, or 2 to 4 at the most, right? And that's because in debate, another rationale for that is that your partner might be able to understand what you're saying and then develop them at a different level, because that's that level that he or she understands or something like that. Go ahead.
I know that I've dealt with Stephen more than I've dealt with Party. And what I've tried, and I've heard about Lincoln Douglas at my high school, we don't normally do it in college on the circuit that we go to, but I'm really keen on structure, that everything has to be structured, even with, like, you know, the speeches or intro, and then you have your preview statement, and then you go into your body, whatever, and then you close it up and you have a big old summary. And what I did at my first ever poly term is that I was so CEDA-minded for like the last 3 years before I did poly. I was like, okay, I'll do I can see a CEDA-structured case, but put it in poly format. And then when I was listening to other people, they were bringing values in. I was like, value. That's Lincoln Douglas, because I know that there was like the value of love, or the value of honor, or the value of liberty, or respect, or whatever, or you know, justice. And then I would write the other case into a value format. You know, I'll have the value first and then go into structure. And
I think you could get really confused about differences among CDLD and Parley and stuff like that. Those are strictly different communities and different debate formats. It has nothing to do with what the stock issues are. Does that make sense? Except to the extent that maybe some communities are more focused on certain issues than others. There are a lot of people in the CEDA community that really think that their debate is about, there are a lot of values underlying those advantages. They call them advantages. There's always some values implicit in the fact that it is an advantage and stuff like that. So don't attribute hardly any meaning to the differences between those things, except that they're different formats. They're different lengths of speeches, and there are different maybe conventions and things like that. The things that I've talked to you about are equally applicable to anybody who's doing any form of debate. I'm talking about propositional analysis and constructing cases for audiences. I'm not talking about constructing cases for NAFTA audiences. Any audience is going to want to know who Bill Herman is when there's a case being presented for them. Any jury is going to want to know who he is, how old he is. Is it in fact him? Is it proven that it's him? There's no aliases or anything like that. Those definitional issues in a court of law, they're going to want to know that. It doesn't matter what community they're in. Any audience, any jury is going to have to use the same criteria for what constitutes murder, and that's motive and the mean, and there's got to be a body, and there's like six others, right? And so they have to apply those criteria, so they're not debatable. The prosecution will outline them during the closing arguments, or maybe during the discovery phase or whatever, and then you have to prove that Bill did have the means, did have the motive, etc. That's the outline of a whole case.
I think what JT was in reference to, because I agree with your perspective, that regionally, sometimes we get caught up in terms, sometimes we get caught up in a mindset of how things should fall into place, and there's some regional selections and some independent judges who look at things maybe not in a holistic perspective like we've drawn out for.
And that's what I said about arrangement versus invention. I'm talking about invention. Most of my lectures today have been about discovery or invention, that process.
The only reason I brought that up is because for me it was a lot easier because when someone did that, I mean, I was in a practice where someone did a point of information and I wasn't used to that. You know, I'm used to my CIC having 3 minutes to sit down. Yeah. And that threw me off, so I'm like, I was trying to make it easier for me because I'm not there to make that.
Yeah. And I don't think anything's wrong with that. I don't think if you use, some people don't like the jargon because they were really concerned about getting away from those other communities, but there's nothing wrong with calling something an advantage. I use that term all the time with my mom. You know, she's not a debater. Mom, I think it would be really advantageous if we did this. This would be the result of it. You know?
And I have to say, coming from an environment where there is no terminology, you know, in the UK, people don't talk about solvency, harms, inherency, topicality. Coming from an environment where there's, you know, there is no terminology, I find, you know, I use it all the time when I'm talking to my debaters because it's so easy to say to somebody, you know, well, hang on a minute, how can you even talk about that, you know, because there's no, you know, there are no harms to the case that you're outlining. Whereas before I'd sit down and, or, you know, I'd stand up and make the case and say, well, there's nothing actually, you know, this case itself, you know, isn't doing anything, you know, and I'll talk about harms in a holistic sense. There is a lot of advantage to the terminology in the sense that it's applicable across debate. The place where I think it causes problems is when you take the terminology which has a specific meaning. You know, the value and criteria of Lincoln-Douglas debate, I'm led to believe, are more specific than they are in Parley, and they're more specific, again, than we would use in just an everyday conversation.
But I was
advocating the policy.
Yeah, they are, and I would still ask them, though, just to make sure that everyone's on the same page. What do you mean by outlining this thing called a criteria explicitly? And then I don't even call it a criteria if I was doing it. There's some standards that we would use to decide if this murder occurred and there are these things, you know, and you call them standards or something. But someone gets up and calls it a value and a criteria and clearly some kind of decision rule and say, hey, what do you mean? What's a criteria? I'm a little new to this. Or you know, some ironic statement like that. Make them explain what it is because a lot of people have no idea.
Oh, yeah.
They have no idea what a criterion is.
I think it's also important to realize, not to get caught up in the terminology, because like an observation, contention, a plank, whatever, criteria, standards, whatever, it's all just different names for the same thing. What's important is like focusing on the points or what is being said under that heading.
And I try to avoid the issues like the harms are, I mean, if it ain't broke, don't fix it was the first statement ever of, oh, there's no harm, there's no reason to do your plan, right? And those things aren't. The stock issues aren't that jargon-ly. Some of the jargon in debate is really jargon, but others of it, it's just another word for something that everyone knows, or there's, you know, an old saying about. Does that make sense?
I would say, I think that's a great point you made, Bill, about the criteria, because even in policy debate, when we look at the term topicality, people have different references to that, right? And you would think that everybody would have a clear understanding what topicality is. Well, there's some judges that are going to accept the argumentation, some judges that are not. So by asking your opposition to it, clearly explain what criteria is and how they intend to utilize it within the course of the Parley round, I think that sets them up for a lot of explaining and explaining things. In addition, it puts that other person to think in a better perspective to win that round, because I would not be surprised at all to find that there was a lack of confusion.
If a lot of the rounds are being won because of confusing things, it's because the community is young, and later on it won't matter. But, you know, topicality is a definitional issue, like whether it's the right topic about the debate, is it part of the witness within the scope of the resolution, et cetera.
I mean, you know you're onto bad ground straight away the moment somebody starts telling you that the value of their debate is, or the criteria by which you're going to judge the debate is whoever debates the best.
Yeah, that's
you know,
silly.
Well, okay, that's what a debate's for. You know, that's why I'm here as a judge.
<question,
you know? laughs> or, you know, they start as I took them here earlier on and said, you know, they start defining beliefs as holds to be true and these kind of things. You know, you really do need to get a handle on what some of these terms are, but they are universally useful. You just have to be careful about using terms that have a specific meaning in a specific context, out of that context.
That's what stock issue theory is. It's the idea that these issues recur over time across multiple kinds of audiences, and they expect you to cover this issue. Cause, you know, definition, what does it mean? How far does it go? How big is it? Things like that. This is obviously up, right? The sky is up. That means it has to be something that's increasing or something that's elevated in value or something like that. You know, you have to clarify all those kinds of issues, and anybody's going to expect that. You can use stock issues to make sure that you convince your mom of certain things, you know? I always use that. Why are you lending it? Why are you using that little word if your mom wouldn't understand what your case is structured? You know, he's a human being, and if you're supposed to be debating in a context that says, we are distinct from other debate formats because we focus on public debate, debate before lay audiences, debate that brings together communities that doesn't cause a technologization or, you know, a sort of a colonization of our personal relationships with others. Because that's, if nothing else, that's, I think, a reasonable reason to distrust some of the policy debate stuff, is it does sort of colonize your mind in ways you have attitudes towards other people. I remember when I was a seated debater what a jerk I was and how aggressive I was and things like that. It's not always true. It doesn't have to be true at all, but because they tend to let the terminology get carried away, that's what happens. And the same thing happens in parliamentary debate communities. And even though I just said that, you're still going to encounter it. And you're going to have to use that jargon. You have to learn about it if you want to be competitive, because it's hard to win the national championship, right? But no matter what, hopefully, even if you only participate in one tournament your whole life, it's worthwhile that you did it. Right? So I don't think we can go over this case because we're out of time. We're going to maybe create a craze about how this house would kiss the sky. I ran a case legalizing drugs on that one.
Colonize Mars.
Yes, something in more space exploration. That's almost not even a metaphorical topic at that point, right? We're going to go more into space, increase funding for space programs. There's a lot of things you can do. You interpret it. I was going to use that as an illustration for the stock issues, but there's a sort of a generic layout of that in the handout. Go ahead.
The bill made a really, really good point. Not really in passing, he did make it as a single point, but at this point, it's worth reiterating. He said, and it would have sounded really awful if I'd said it because he's American and didn't say it. He said, Americans are really Americentric. I can tell you, it's totally true. If you can stand up in front of a judge and debate whatever it is you're talking about, if the first thing you think is, how would this apply in the United Nations or the EU, or how can I take this out of the US, then you've won 50% of the debate you'll take part in. Because most people haven't got a clue. And if you can bone up on those issues, then your preparation can really be, you know, enhanced by saying, right, you know, not only am I going to deal with wood, but I'm going to take this house. I don't mean, you know, that I'm going to take this house to some weird and wacky place. We're going to talk about, you know, taxation in Ecuador. That's not what we're talking about. But, you know, if you can make this house more global, more applicable to the world community as a whole, then, you know, you'll also have a big advantage, I think. That's just an aside to say, you know, he made that point, really homing on that. If you can read international politics and pick up on that and apply your issues, then you will go far.
Even I've been involved in debates where even like it's taken beyond the scope of politics and nation states and just like humanity, and like debating like really esoteric or philosophical measures. And that's always fun, I think.
I know John Meany's standing out there waiting for us, so we might want to go ahead.
Bill, I know you mentioned that you're short on time, but I'm real curious. I'd like to see you explain how you ran this.
This house would kiss the sky. It means that you're talking about something that's high up, that's like getting high, or like some kind of higher realm of consciousness. And so kissing it is embracing it or getting there somehow. So that's what drugs do. And I thought that this is clearly a way to link to a policy. This is a straightforward link, and I thought it was so creative and I was acknowledging. Now I think it's kind of tedious, but just an example. You legalize drugs, because that's drugs get you high. For this guy, you know, and this is also, it embodies sort of the spirit of this phrase because it comes from Jimi Hendrix, who was part of the drug culture of the 60s, right? I think he even died from an overdose of drugs. Mm-hmm. Right? So it's clearly alluding to drug policy. So you can legalize drugs and kind of talk about how it costs too much to fight the war and it'd be better to do what Amsterdam does and all that other stuff. You know, you could also kiss this guy by advocating something totally different and kind of contrary to what Jimi Hendrix maybe was about, and increase spirituality. Right? Advocate a commitment to spirituality. You know, advocate Christianity or some version of Christianity or something like that, and say, and you might get dinged on technical knowledge or something, but just in general, or increase in spirituality or some religious doctrine, or you know, get, you know.
You could want to move it then too, could you, like affirmative action?
It could be, affirmative action could be linked to that, maybe something about the glass ceiling or something, right. But that's getting pretty out there with the link.
You know,
and that's what a lot of people do that, and I know that's one more place where I think John and I disagree, is that his teams are more likely to be pretty squirrely with how those terms come out, and I like clean, cold interpretations that are clearly in the spirit of the metaphor on the topic. Because that's why the topic was there, was because somebody who thought that was an interesting thing was worthwhile debating about. Okay, we better try one more time.
I'm sorry to do it, but I'd actually be curious to hear you respond to that, because that's what I was thinking when you were saying that you hated to hear definitional arguments. And the only times I've ever run definitional arguments when I felt the case was so squirrely that they weren't talking about.
Well, my response is always to say this will sound pretentious, but it's never stopped in the past. Humpty Dumpty said, you know, words mean exactly what I want them to mean, no more, no less. You know, when you debate, this House believes the Republicans should do this, you automatically ring-fence the motion. You never, ever debate actually what the policy says, even in strict auto. You know, you have to provide some notion of interpretation. You have to say, unless the motion is, you know, 5.5 pages long, you have to provide some kind of interpretation. So, I mean, to me, pretty much the world is your oyster. And unless you can make a really good case in front of me as a judge, unless you can make a really, really convincing case why the motion is totally off the wall, then I would probably expect you to simply run with it. The only exception to that is I did see a case once where the debate was this House would put the metal to the pedal, as opposed to pedal to the metal. And to me, this was a clear advocation that we should not do something that we would usually do. And the team who ran the case ran it as a we should do something that we usually do. And the other team said, you know, well, actually, this is completely arse about face. You know, we should be doing the reverse. And so I gave the ballot to them because, you know, there was a sense to the motion.
Mark, what if they presented to you as an even if? Even if we take this resolution, which we are going to argue definitionally with you on, and take it straight up, would you be more willing to accept that type of analysis if I presented to you as an even if?
I'm not entirely sure.
Well, I'm saying if I like this concept of arguing definitionally, I would approach that, but I would take it straight up too.
We're really out of time, and we're talking about topicality arguments, which are, you know, a matter for opposition strategy and reputation. And I know people are standing right outside, so I think we should call it a night and watch the same debate.